What do these stones mean? I have enjoyed this summer's social media campaign for NLUMC, our God Goes With Us photo challenge. For the uninitiated, we challenged people to take pictures of themselves wherever they were, forming a cross with whatever's at hand. And you saw some of those pictures. And they were posted on our North Leamington United Mennonite Church Facebook page with the hashtag God Goes With Us. And the purpose of this campaign was to encourage engagement on our Facebook group page, to build community online, and to have a positive connection with God and church during a season when so many of us travel. And I really have appreciated the creativity that's gone into people's contributions. Children and babies forming a cross on the floor, swimmers forming a cross at the pool, natural crosses formed from sticks, water bottles, paddles, and even tomato buckets. And for our family, we talked to our children about the photo campaign when we were in Algonquin Provincial Park. And Matea especially got into this idea that God goes with us. She started seeing crosses everywhere and really loved being the horizontal portion of a cross when the photograph with Papa. We took more than one photo that we could have contributed. And we named God's nearness then, in connection to this photo, in that natural setting, in tangible ways. And I know I appreciated the invitation the campaign provided to talk about our faith on the hiking trail in a simple and hands-on way. For us, it worked. We felt connected to our North Leamington United Mennonite Church family while we were in Algonquin. And we talked about how God goes with us wherever we are. We're never far from God's presence, from God's love. It's an important concept, whatever your age. And most importantly, for me, as a parent, it gave us an excuse, a chance to talk to our kids about our faith. Even in a pastor's family, even when both parents are pastors, this doesn't always happen as often as it could or should. Kendall and I both want to talk to our children about our faith. Our faith is most precious to us. We have invested our lives in the church. We want to follow Jesus in all we say and do. For us, they're dearly loved. For us, our deepest desire is that our children grow up knowing how much they're loved by God, and that they also get to express God's love to others with their whole lives. Still, life is busy, and we get distracted by music practice, by cleaning up craft supplies, by getting meals on and off the table, by getting to extracurricular activities, getting to bed. Even pastors who are parents can use a little help prompting these valuable conversations. But as a pastor, I do know this without a doubt. There is nothing quite so profound in the growth and development of a child's faith as conversations and connections with older Christians, with parents, grandparents, and mentors from family, church, and community. There's a whole organization dedicated to studying the development of faith in children and youth. It's called Sticky Faith. And this is one of its primary findings, that there is nothing more profound than hearing and seeing Christian faith as it is relayed in word and deed in the lives of those who love them. This Sunday, we're kicking off our Sunday school with this celebratory Christian Ed Sunday. And we brought these fabulous stones up to the front with our children to form this cairn, this altar, this pile. And we're exploring this interesting story from Joshua 4. The story comes at a significant point in Israel's history. Moses has just passed away, and Joshua has assumed leadership. After wandering for 40 years in the desert, it's finally time to move into the promised land. The people have gathered from their camp at Shittim and marched to the edge of the River Jordan. The story of their crossing actually begins a chapter before the one we read. And the priests carrying the Ark of the Covenant, which is basically a decorated box containing the stone tablets of the law, the priests, they put their feet in the river. And when their feet touch the riverbed, just as the children demonstrated, the riverbed stops flowing, the water piles up so that all the people walk across on dry land. This scene reminds me of the scene in the Disney movie Moana, when the ocean parts so that young Moana can come in and grab the heart of Te Fiti, that water piling up. At the River Jordan, the priests bearing the word of God stand in the middle of the river, and the people cross to the other side without getting their feet wet. Essentially, it's the miracle of the crossing of the Red Sea when the people escape slavery from Egypt. It's repeated for a new generation and a new time. And then in Joshua 4, the people are across, but the priests are still in the middle of the dry riverbed, and 12 men, one from each tribe, are requested to take up stones from the middle of the river, from where the priests were, and to carry them to their evening camp at Gilgal. And since they're requested to carry them on their shoulder, I imagine they didn't take pebbles. They took, you know, hefty stones. And then they set them up in a special pile called an altar. And the purpose of this act of stone carrying, it's to prompt storytelling. The people are told, in days to come, your children after you will ask your parents, what do these stones mean? And their parents must tell them, Israel went across the Jordan River on dry ground. The Lord your God dried up the Jordan for you until you crossed it. He did to the Jordan River the same thing he'd done to the Red Sea. He dried up the Red Sea till we crossed it. He did it so that all the nations on earth would know he's powerful. He did it so that you would always have respect for the Lord your God. And I want to point out a few items from this chapter that seem particularly significant to us this Sunday at NLUMC. First, that phrase we sang, when your children ask you. Children will ask questions. They certainly have questions. Sometimes, often, these questions come at unexpected, sometimes inconvenient times, and there can be formulated in really unique ways. Over my years of pastoring, parenting, and working in children's programs, I have heard some very profound questions, sometimes commentary and instruction from the mouths of babes. Children wonder about a lot, about how to imagine a God who's invisible, how to think about Jesus. They think a lot about God's power and their weakness, about faith and science, good and evil, right and wrong. They're sorting out so much of that, developmentally, stage by stage. And if you have a good relationship with that child, questions should come to you. That is a privilege. You may be a parent, a grandparent, aunt, uncle, older brother or sister, or simply a caring adult in that child's life. It is my profound prayer that NLUMC may form a community where children feel safe bringing and airing their questions and sharing their ideas about God and about Christian faith and life. Second point is, what do these stones mean? These stones. I think often children's questions and commentary are prompted by tangible things and life experiences. A storm, for example, might prompt questions or commentary about God's power and our fear, or bring up the story of Jesus calming the storm. But you can also plant or point out things that can prompt conversations of faith. I imagine that back at the Jordan River, the question about the stones would not have been completely spontaneous generation after generation. Israelite parents might have taken a pilgrimage to the stones at Gilgal, for example, as we might visit a historical site, for example, or a museum. Or they might recreate the stones of Gilgal in their own place, kind of like we've done today. And their parents' intense interest in these particular stones or in building their own pile of stones would then prompt the question of meaning, what do these stones mean? And give those parents a chance to tell the story they've been longing to tell. And you can transform an innocuous item into one of spiritual value by the power of intention. You can pick up a rock at a sacred moment, form a pile, and presto, becomes a reminder of God's power and presence, as the rocks at Gilgal did for the people of Israel, and as these rocks have done for us today. There are so many possibilities that might prompt questions from our children. Photos, items from nature, items from your childhood, Any and all of these can prompt a conversation or commentary, and this is a good thing. There are many natural ways to bridge into a spiritual conversation. Even movies or books can prompt comparisons, like the Moana image I mentioned earlier. We can make a bridge to the Red Sea story. The third point I will note out is this phrase, "you will tell them." The presumption here in the Bible story is that you have stories of faith to pass on to the next generation. And yes, I mean you. You might also have stories of doubt, and there's a time and place for that. You may feel insecure about telling your stories. You may think there's someone more qualified to tell stories. You may fear telling it wrong or missing a detail. But hear this. You have stories to tell when you are asked. And if you are being asked, you are the one who's there to tell the stories. You can't always put it off for Sunday school. The moments don't always last. And there are at least two types of stories you have to tell. One is the story that was shared to you, which you can share to others. It's the old story, the big story, the Bible stories. The many stories from God creating the world, Israel crossing the Red Sea, Jesus calming the storm, Jesus dying and rising to new life. This story, these stories, cannot be told too often. We tell these stories in Sunday school, but they can be told in other places, at bedtime using storybooks, mealtimes and reunions, at the beach. We can be reminded of these stories of God acting in the lives of God's people. We can pick up a rock and try to remember how many Bible stories have rocks in them. We can talk about Jesus during a storm. We can remember manna in the wilderness when we eat a snack on a hike. When we're scared, we can try to remember a story where someone in the Bible was scared too, and God showed up. And maybe remember the story of David and Goliath, or Miriam sending off baby Moses in the basket. For the Bible stories are our stories too. And there are connections to our lived lives if we look for them. And the second type of story that is so deeply important to tell is your own story. Your own lived experience of God's presence in your life. Your own God goes with us stories. Tell those children in your life how you experienced God in a special way. Tell the youth how you've connected with God. Tell anyone who will hear. For everyone, these moments are different, but I believe most, yes, even all of us have had spiritual experiences. We have touch the divine at various moments of our lives. One that comes to mind for me is that when my dad was undergoing a series of critical surgeries, we spent almost a week parked in the family room at the intensive care unit in the hospital in London. And one of my friends suddenly felt the urge to pack a cooler full of sandwiches and fruit and deliver them to us at an unexpected time. It was extremely timely, unbidden, and came to us with a sense of divine gift, divine comfort and blessing. I could, if I wanted, tell this story when we're packing a cooler for a family outing, how I once experienced God in a gift of cooler full of sandwiches and fruit. Or when we look out at the stars at night, I could tell my children how once I went out at night feeling sad and alone and scared and sat on a rock when the stars came out, and I felt a distinct sense of being not alone, being held. The stars could help me share my faith with my children. Fourth, there's a sense of explanation. When the children are commanded to tell the story, there's an expectation that the stories will be told with some explanation of God's action and God's intention. In this case, God parted the Jordan River and the Red Sea so that God could show his power and that all nations would come to know him. Must. Finally, the text says, when the children ask you, you must tell them. There is a sense that the people are being mentally and emotionally prepared to tell the stories to the next generations, and there is no out. The verb is that people must tell the story when children ask. The stones are set up, and they're given the words to say, and more than that, they have a chance to practice the story as they hear it again and again. And so can we. We can practice saying stories of faith to ourselves with or without our children present. We can practice saying them so they don't come in a forced or completely awkward way, perhaps. But more than that, I believe people can develop a sense of confidence and awareness, a way of being open to those teachable moments, those moments when a story connects, be it a Bible story or your own story of faith, so they don't all slip by you. The thing is, children grow on stories, our stories and God's story. We're all wired for story. Research tells us that children learn how to behave, think, and act through the characters they meet through stories. And stories are probably our largest resource in shaping the faith of the next generations. May stories factor large in our children's experience, for they need our stories. Let us tell our stories to the next generations, that they may have stories of faith to tell to the generations that follow them. For God is powerful. God, who parted the Red Sea and again the Jordan River, continues to act in powerful and meaningful ways from generation to generation, and leads us again and again from slavery to freedom, from wandering to purpose, always leading us with love, with hope, and with power. And if God is always active, we will always have a story to tell. Praise God for that.